I'm Sean.
I'm Paul.
I'm Simon.
And I'm Richard.
Okay, let's do it all together. I'll get the microphone in the middle. I should have had two microphones, so we could have done it in stereo and done the Beatles thing. And you're all in...
Elvis Kings.
But there's so many dates. So is 2005 really the right date for the start? Is that about right?
Well, the thing is, like, the band has been around quite a while. I don't know. Me and Sam...
In various
different forms, different genres, slightly different genres.
Different members.
But as we are now as a four-piece and having been signed to the label that we're with now, we've been together for 5 years.
2012, so that 2012 counts. There was way back in childhood, in some cases here, and there was Zeppelin and Thin Lizzy covers. There was all of that stuff too, correct?
Yeah,
so who wants to talk about, are we talking the boys are back in town? Are we talking Jailbreak? Come on, let's talk some Thin Lizzy here.
Oh, yeah, it was all that good stuff, yeah. But both of those were, they were the sort of songs that got me into Thin Lizzy in the first place. But then after that, it was like, you know, Killer on the Loose.
Yeah, that's the problem. Thin Lizzy, everybody thinks there's only like three songs by Thin Lizzy.
No.
Zeppelin, we know there's at least four songs.
At least four songs, yeah.
Maybe five.
I remember getting the Led Zeppelin live DVD, mm-hmm. and that blew me away. And that watching that DVD, watching them live, really hit home that I really want to make a career out of this. And just amazing, like, the DVD covers like some of the early shows in London that they did, and then goes to like when they come to America and they're doing like stadiums. It's awesome.
Well, you know, one of the things that before we get into the real stuff that comes right out within seconds is that you don't want to be mistaken for all these bands from the North, the Monkees, the Chiefs. But I mean, when I think Sheffield, I think Pulp, I think Richard Hawley, I don't really think of Chiefs and Arctic. Because I go back at least a step. Yeah. But the first thing that happens is everybody's like, okay, guitar band, they're from here, they're going to sound exactly like this. The vocals are going to sound exactly like Alex, or they're going to sound directly like. And yet, do you really think that people really know that much these days, and that you really have to separate yourself because of these, you know, because of a few big bands that happen to be from, you know, from that particular, you know, place? What do you think?
I think it's important to stay true to your roots, and we've always wrote and played music for us initially, you know, like back when we used to be in a practice room twice a week, and we'd be writing songs in a practice room in that kind of environment, and we never set out to be like, oh, we want to be like these guys, we want to be like that, and you know, I've come across people who've said, oh, you sound like Alex Turner, and it's like, well, yeah, because I'm from up north, so I am going to sound a little bit like Alex Turner, like a similar accent. I'll pronounce certain words that people might have only ever heard Arctic Monkeys say because they're such a popular band.
So suddenly, if you're from somewhere, you know, if you're from the South, you have to sound like Lynyrd Skynyrd. If you're from Georgia, you have to sound like R.E.M.
Yeah, and we always get that question in interviews. What style would you say your music is? I always say, well, what do you think our style is? What if you've listened to the music, how would you categorize us? Because we can say we're indie pop, electronic,
alternative, indie electronic. You know, just because you use an instrument doesn't make you a genre. But I'll go down this road early. We sound like a car crashing next to a guy burping. I just think, but it seems like, so I'm going to get this into a question versus an opinion, which is, it seems like it is, for better or for worse, a responsibility of a band these days to be able to describe their music. But what is a filter for an Alvarez Kings song? When you're turning around to each other, where you go, okay, this is an Alvarez Kings song, because maybe this will help people understand what you're about.
Definitely the filter for an Alvarez Kings song is, for like the utmost, is the melody. And that's where it all begins. So I'll, like most of the songs, it'll begin on my acoustic guitar at home, and I'll just be jamming along, and I'll come up with melodies. I'll record them into my phone, and then I'll send those via email to Sean, because Sean lives 3 hours away in London, and then we sort of decide, yeah, that melody's great, it's got hooks, that's Alvarez Kings, that's what we want, it's got the content lyrically, and it's, we feel like it would be a good sort of representation of an Alvarez Kings song, of a story, or whatever the subject title is of that song initially, and then we can build sort of, so we work from the top down, and we can put all the other sort of fundamental Alvarez Kings production, all the foundations that make an Alvarez Kings song in thereafter.
If it's not got a popular sounding hook to it, it's not worth anything. So there's been songs that have gone straight down by the wayside just because it's not memorable enough, or the melody wasn't quite right. But as Simon was saying earlier, the filter is between us two. We sort of just, you know, ideas flow back and forth, and we just produce it ourselves, basically.
So let's get dangerous. Let's go even deeper into the rabbit hole. I'll do it in the announcer voice. Since Logic Pro Tools informed the sound, this is not a guitar record, but it's also not an EDM synth-driven record either.
The thing is, like, it wasn't ultimately a conscious decision. It was a natural progression of where the music went. When we got into the studio in LA, we saw some awesome analog synths, like some really old school analog.
You mean like, look at this, right in segue here. You mean like in producer Carlos's place?
Yeah.
Like at now, did he have the toys, or did Ocean have the toys?
So we initially,
we're gonna get geeky.
Yeah. So we initially did the live tracking at Ocean in Burbank, and that was like a really big live room, and we sort of recorded live the drums, the guitars, the bass. So we just got the initial sort of meat of the sound down live.
Yeah, it's good to record drums in places like that.
Yeah, definitely. And to get that live vibe as well, we're all playing together. And then we went back to Carlos's place up at Eagle Rock in LA. So he's got his own home studio.
And that's where he's got all the old classic. That's where he's got all the Prophets and the Junos and all the toys.
Yeah, he was awesome to it with those kind of synths, because we've never had access to those in the past. Sean's done a lot of writing right on the laptop in the bedroom.
Sure, GarageBand imitates it, but it ain't like having the real thing.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah, I mean, you're a synth geek, so...
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's something that I just got into in later life, to be honest. Like, I've always been a guitarist, first and foremost. And then it just... I think it's more circumstance that our music went in that direction, because I'm not around physically, like, for us to rehearse in a studio together. So we get an idea, and it's like, well, I can't even record my guitar into a computer, but I've got Logic, and I can put a chord progression behind it, and how's that chord progression going to turn out? Well, I just really love old school synthesis, so naturally it kind of developed from there, and then just send the MIDI out. That's all we did in the studio, just send the MIDI out, and then put it through the Prophet and play around.
In fact, let's go back to the cottage in the national park, shall we?
You've done your homework.
Maybe.
So the cottage was booked by our record label. We had a hard 5 months of touring, and then the label was like, right guys, we need to get this debut record done. So bearing in mind we had all the song ideas there, the label booked us a cottage in a beautiful Yorkshire Dales? Yorkshire Dales, like really picturesque, away from everything, in the middle of nowhere. We was there for a week to do pre-production on the album. So basically that was our testing ground. We needed to prove to the record label that we're ready to record an album. And it was quite a stressful week. We was limited on time, but we put in some long sessions, and by the end of it, the record label was like, right, I'm happy with these songs. Let's get you to LA and record the album.
You've just done, did I count, 27... you know, by the time you finish, right, it's been like 20, I guess my math's pretty good. 27 shows, and all of this work, and now you're signed, and the record's been out a few months, but you also know that there's still a long road ahead. Nobody has suddenly gotten, you know, perception reality, right? We're signed to Warner's, yeah. We've got the record, we're doing this. But we're not exactly sitting here in the massive tour bus just yet. So it's a cautionary tale for anybody to understand that it's a little bit of a vicious game, right?
Yeah, well,
all our friends back home are like, wow, you signed to Warner, you must be living the high life on the tour bus, but you know what, we're not stupid. We're still at the early stages of our career, and there's still a hell of a lot to do, and we want to keep at it and work hard in order to get to that next stage, to be able to afford the luxury of always being on a tour bus.
If anything, as well, as soon as you get signed to a label, it becomes harder. It's more difficult. Yeah. It doesn't get any easier.
Isn't that a cautionary tale?
Well, you there's more demands from you, from the label, and the you when you're working for yourselves just outside the label, you can sort of get a bit lazy from time to time, and but when you've got somebody like Warner Brothers, who are a mass company, they're on you 24/7. They're checking your socials, they're making sure you're posting, they put you out to work. Like, not only have we done 27 shows, we've done countless interviews, we've done press shots, we've also done some live sessions.
I think it's important for people to understand that what they got on this record might not be what they get on the next record.
Maybe not. We've already talked about this, and like you said, it's a really big sounding album. So, you know, we might, for the next one, I mean, it's really scary already to start thinking about the next album.
When you're barely out there with
exactly,
this one.
And we feel like fail to prepare to fail. That's the saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we may strip things back a little bit, or we may, who knows, like whatever, we'll see what this album does, and whatever we are writing, and how, whatever feels comfortable with sort of, it's going back to the melody, how the melody fits, how that works, how the lyrical content, that sort of is the basis of where the meat and the production of the songs. So, yeah, and like for me as well, we had a good working relationship with Carlos, and he's a great guy. He actually came to the Anaheim and the LA show. It was the first time we'd seen him since recording the album and the album coming out. So that was really, really good. We actually gave him a CD.
Oh, no.
Physical CD. No, yeah, he didn't have the CD.
It's okay. I don't have a... They even got me a... They give me the digital, because that's what they do.
He was like, I'm not paying for the CD. He was like, I'm getting a free one from the band.
God, the label didn't send him a...
Well, he actually said the label are going to send him a couple of albums, which... Yeah, yeah.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and here's what it is. It's two of your songs on the outside, and then songs by anybody you want to play in between.